From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. If you tuned in last week, you probably said, what happened to The Miracle Hunter? I had somebody else, a guest hosting my show, Elizabeth Ficicelli, stepped in and did a beautiful job talking about miracles and hosting the show while I was in Poland and Lithuania. And I was there filming some episodes of Explore with the Miracle Hunter, perhaps airing at the end of this year or next year. Places like Częstochowa and Giertswald, considered the Lourdes of Poland. We walked in the footsteps of John Paul II and Faustina throughout Krakow and talked about Eucharistic miracles at Sokolka and Legnica, the two most recent cases in the world. We went to Lithuania, to Vilnius, exploring Our Lady Gate of Dawn and Our Lady of Shiluva, the very first investigated and approved apparition in Europe. So absolutely amazing places to see. I feel so blessed to have gone there and to film those places, and I look forward to bringing them to you on Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN. We've got a great show ahead for you today. When we talk about Mary in the month of May, our minds, of course, go to Our Lady of Fatima, that big feast day on May 13th, coming up next week. And when we talk about the world's greatest expert on Our Lady of Fatima, we probably have to look no further than Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho. She's the vice postulator for the canonization causes of Jacinta and Francisco, and also for Sister Lucia. She's got a book called Inside the Light, and we'll be excited to ask her, where does the cause of Sister Lucia stand, and when can we see her to join her cousins and to be named a saint? We'll be looking forward to that replayed interview in just a little bit. And also, we'll be talking to one of my favorite guests, Adam Bly. He's a demonologist from the Diocese of Pittsburgh, but he's been involved with another book called World of Marian Apparitions. In my opinion, this perhaps is the greatest book, at least from a visual point of view, related to modern Marian apparitions. And it's a beautiful hardcover book. So Adam Bly will be joining us in another repeat interview, talking to us about the world of Marian apparitions. So we look forward to both of those conversations in just a little bit. And of course, check out my show, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, that I was referring to previously, related to episodes from Poland. We've got an episode airing today, May 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, about Pompeii, where I take a trip to the famed ruins of Pompeii and explore the life's work of Blessed Bartolo Longo, known as the Apostle of the Rosary. And he performed many miracles in his life, and there was an apparition story there as well. Check that one out, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Pompeii, tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also pick up my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural, out from Tan Books and available at EWTNRC.com. Is the church anti-science? No, not at all. This book lays it all out there and shows the various ways that the church has been a big proponent and patron of science over the ages. And in recent years and recent times, they use science to investigate the miraculous, finding out what's true and what's false. Check that one out, Science and the Miraculous. And later in today's show, we'll be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today, we've got Our Lady of Grace from Plove di Sacco in Italy in the year 1631. And the might-be saint of the day for today, May 6th, is Blessed Maria Catalina Troiani, who lived from 1813 to 1887, going from Rome all the way to Cairo. And the question of the week, must the Catholic Church wait until the visionaries die to approve an apparition? See if I can answer that one later in the program. Let's take a look at miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And we've talked about this news item in recent weeks about a controversial Italian seer to meet with an ecclesial commission. So the commission of the Bishop of Civita Castellana, Marco Salvi, will listen to Maria Giuseppina Scarpula, better known as Gisella Cardia, the self-styled steer beyond the now famous Madonna of Trevignano. It's not yet clear whether when the woman will be summoned by the experts, but the meeting should take place in the next 2 weeks. Cardia will be questioned by the commission made up of Mariologists, exorcists, psychologists, theologian, canonists, and various outstanding issues. And it started from the tears of blood, which since 2016 have once a month exuded in Trevignano Romano, tears that, according to the private investigator, turned out to be pig's blood. And experts will also ask the woman to account for the statuette of the Madonna purchased in Medjugorje in the apparitions of the Virgin Mary that have been claimed on every third of the month. And Mary is said to have entrusted her with messages to share with all humanity. And this seer has said to have fled town and is under legal investigation as well. So things are not looking good for Gisella Cardia, this self-styled seer, as you might say. So stay tuned. We'll give you a report on what happens next. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in with the correct answer. And last week we had the question, we were talking about the Virgin Mary in green, and that interview by Elizabeth Ficicelli talking about Our Lady of Revelation, a Virgin of Revelation. And so the question from last week, in what apparition did Mary give a green scapular? And in that apparition in 1840 to Sister Justine Busquebarou on January 28, 1840, a daughter of charity, a nun in Paris, received the green scapular. Thanks to everybody who wrote in with that answer. Hey, let's take a look at the trivia question for today. This is the month of May, the month of Mary. So the question is, what is the technical term for the veneration given to Mary, as opposed to that of the other saints, or the worship that's given to God? Again, that question, what is the technical name for the veneration given to Mary, as opposed to that of the other saints, or the worship given to God? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab, and you send me a message that way, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for the canonization cause of Jacinta and Francisco, and she'll be giving us an update. When can we expect that their cousin, Sister Lucia of Fatima, will be named a saint as well? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, vice postulator of the canonization cause of Sister Lucia Fatima and author of the book Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima. Welcome to the program today, Sister Angela.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's an honor for me to be in your program.
Wonderful. And it's so great to talk to you again. We talked many years ago on my radio show, and we talked ahead of the canonization of the two youngest saints in the history of the Catholic Church, that being Saint Jacinta and Francisco Marto. As your vice postulator, it was a great honor to speak with you. And you've got a new book that's out called Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima. Why did you write this book now?
Well, I wrote the book after many years of people asking me to do it, because I, as an invitation from the sanctuary, I do a seven-hour talk formation on the message of Fatima. And in one of these talks, Brian Canelli, the editor of the 10 books, was there. And in the end, he was insisting with me to do the book. I was sort of, you know, reluctant, because I'm much more comfortable speaking than writing, especially in English. But my superior at that time, she was with me in the meeting with Brian. And Brian said, how can I convince you to write? And my superior said, well, I just have to tell her and she will obey. So I did it. See, it's an act of obedience upon the request of so many people asking me to put in words what I do in my talks.
Wonderful. Yeah, Brian is an editor of one of my books as well, so we have that in common. He's a great editor to have. Well, I'm so glad you put together this book, Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima, from Tan Books. And one of the fascinating things about this is that you were the vice postulator for Jacinta and Francisco, and now you are the vice postulator for Sister Lucia of Fatima. How did you get this job?
Well, in 2012, when I was in Rome studying this formation, 3 months formation, to become postulator of the cause of Francisco and Jacinta, because at those days I was only vice postulator. I met the postulator for the Carmelite order. So the priest, the Carmelite priest, who is in charge of all the causes connected with the Carmelite order. So he saw me, and the vice postulator for the cause of Lucy in those days, he was also very sick. So he asked me if I could, once that I has already started with the other two, if I could help him with the cause of Lucia. And that's what I'm doing since 2014, which is amazing. Well, I consider to have the three visionaries, the three seers of Our Lady in my life. This is very impressive. And they are helping me a lot in my personal pathway in order to become a saint myself, which is, of course, all of us.
That's wonderful. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the author of the book Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima, and also the vice postulator for the canonization cause of Sister Lucia of Fatima. And in your book, in the introduction, you mentioned that on March 28th, 2001, you actually got to meet Sister Lucia of Fatima. Tell us about the circumstances of that and what that meeting was like.
Well, it was one of the greatest graces of my life. In those days, I used to help Father Condor, which was the vice postulator for the cause of Francisco and Jacinta, giving him, I was just helping him with the medical letters, reporting miracles. So one day he just told me, Sister Angela, today I invite you to go to Coimbra because we are going to sing happy birthday to Sister Lucia. Mm. It was her anniversary. So I was so excited. And I remember that, you know, he told me by joke, you know, Sister, she can read. So it just in case I went to confession, it was so funny. Of course, then when I saw her, she was not with the attitude that she could read souls. All the contrary, she was so beautiful, so tiny, and irradiating so much light. So I was kind of, you know, emotional. In my heart, I was understanding. I was seeing the woman that saw the Blessed Mother and our Lord, and my community, Alianza de Santa Maria, our charisma is based on what she testified. So I could see that my life, being a member of this religious community, so connected with this woman. So I was kind of nervous, but I told her, Sister Lucia, I belong to a religious community, which mission is to spread the message of Fatima, so to keep the vocation of the shepherd children. And she holds my hand, and immediately she answers, well, then you have to come here to the Carmelite convent because that's where I am. So I could see she was so normal and so full of life at the same time, but at the same time with a great sense of humor. It was really impressive for me to meet her.
That's amazing. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator of the cause of canonization for Sister Lucia Fatima. You know, I was there on May 13th, 2017, the 100-year centenary for Fatima and the canonization of the two young shepherd children. I actually saw you in the crowd when I was there with a million other people and celebrating that day. It was such a great event to be there for. Yeah. And We have two very different styles of canonizations here, or the causes, because these are the Jacinta and Francisco were the two youngest shepherd children. You had very little to go on in order to push them ahead to be recognized from blessed to saint. And of course, the miracles were recognized by Rome and Pope Francis in good time right before that canonization. But with Sister Lucia, you have an entire lifetime of writing and speaking and living, and much more to sift through and go through, and a much more difficult cause. Talk about the difference between the efforts in those two causes.
Well, like you said, Lucia, we are talking about a 97-year-old woman with many writings, because people, since 1970, the provincial told her to keep all the letters she was receiving. So before that, we have no idea how many letters she received, but from 1970, we know that she received around or more than 70,000 letters. And she wrote an answer to most of them. So we had to recollect a sample of letters that she wrote, her diary, we are talking about 2,000 pages. Anyway, we end up with a diocesan process of 16,000 pages with witnesses and so on. So now we are in the process of writing what in the Congregation of the Saints they call the Positio, which is a volume where we have to make in a summarized way to enlighten the most important virtues of Sister Lucia's life. It's like a summary of those 16,000 turned to 1,000 pages so the theologians can read. So in this moment, I'm almost finishing this Positio book to present to the Congregation of the Saints. When the theologians consider that it's okay, I mean that she practiced virtues in an heroic grade, then the Holy Father will proclaim her venerable. Then we will need another miracle for the beatification and one miracle for the canonization. So right now, she's only servant of God. And I truly appreciate all of you that are listening to us today that pray for her canonization, because we need prayers for this. This is more about the grace of God than our work. So I really need you to join me to pray for the canonization of Lucia.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the vice postulator for Sister Lucia of Fatima, who's currently a servant of God, and she needs to move along those steps to venerable, blessed, and then saint. And one question I've been dying to ask you for some years now, the miracle that was used for the canonization of the two youngest shepherd children, was Sister Lucia invoked in those prayers as well? And if so, can that miracle be used in order to push her from venerable to blessed almost immediately once venerable is established?
Well, thank you for that question. It's really an interesting question. Well, the miracle that was with the little boy Lucas, now everybody knows anyway, but it was just through the intercession of Francisco and Jacinta. If Sister Lucia was involved, then it was going to be a problem canonically, because a miracle to be recognized, to attribute the miracle to the intercession of a saint, excuse me, has to be people praying to that saint and that saint only. So right now, I really encourage people, when they want to pray for a miracle, not to ask the three shepherd children, but only the servant of God, Lucia. Otherwise, it will not help her cause. I don't know if I was clear, if I made myself
no,
clear.
No, I think that's an interesting aspect, because in every canonization cause, if you pray to your favorite saints, St. Therese, Padre Pio, John Paul II, Mother Teresa, and a future saint, for example, the Vatican would say, we're going to go with one of these other saints, not this new one that you're proposing. So it is an absolute challenge for you, I'm sure, to have people limit their prayers to Sister Lucia. Well, we're so grateful to you, Sister Angela Fatima de Coelho, for joining us today talking about this book, Inside the Light, from Tan Books. And what is your hope for people who pick up this book, and how is it distinct from the many other books on Fatima that's out there?
Well, I think it's a summary of the most important theological aspects of the message of Fatima. I think it's written in a very simple way, or people can easily read it, even though it's theologically based and rooted on theology. So, but what I think, my intention is that people growing more and more to being close to the Blessed Mother, they learn with her and from her how to love more and more our God, and especially Jesus in the Eucharist. So
beautiful.
I think this book shows a little bit, or at least it was my intention, how can we follow this path of sanctity? And it cannot be difficult, otherwise Francisco and Jacinta were not canonized. So they are a source of inspiration for us and encouragement for us to not giving up, fighting for our own sanctity with the grace of our Lord.
And those are beautiful reflections. We're so grateful to you, Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, author of the new book, Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima, from Tan Books. You can find that anywhere Catholic books are sold. Thank you so much, Sister Angela, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
God bless. That was Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho talking to us about the canonization cause of Sister Lucia Fatima and her new book, Inside the Light, Understanding the Message of Fatima. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting your questions when I give a talk. I travel around the country. I talk to about 20 different parishes or shrines or other conferences throughout the country and talk for about 45 minutes usually and usually queue it up for questions at the end. And I'd love to hear what people are thinking about related to miracles and otherwise. And I do my best to answer them. And when I was in Poland, I answered a few questions there as well. One of the questions that came up was this one. Must the Catholic Church wait until the visionaries die to approve an apparition as authentic? And it's a great question. I think that people have this assumption, especially when we talk about the alleged apparition phenomena at Medjugorje happening in 1981 in Bosnia-Herzegovina, former Yugoslavia, where the visionaries were young children and are now in their 50s and 60s, and they have grown up. But I think that many people say, well, of course the church would not make a judgment on this. They are still alive. Well, that is true and false. The church likes often to wait until the visionary has passed away. Makes things easier in the sense that the church doesn't have to worry about the visionary tacking on new messages at the end of their life, which unfortunately has happened in different cases throughout history. But sometimes the church feels that the messages are meant for the world immediately. We talk about a case like Fatima, for example, where the visionaries had those visions in 1917, and the two youngest died, but Sister Lucia was still alive, and she claimed later visions in the 1920s and beyond, and the church eventually went on to approve those visions while she was still alive. So we see cases like that. We also talk about San Nicolas, Argentina, where Bishop Hector Cardelli, he approved the apparitions received by Gladys Moda de Quiroga that were starting in 1983 and persist even to this day. Those stand as approved apparitions, or at least the early ones are. So normally, they wait for the visions to cease completely and in a definitive way, but not in that case. So there are numerous cases like this throughout the years where the visionary has not passed away, and yet the church goes ahead and approves them. So thank you so much for your question, and the answer is that they don't have to wait till the visionary dies. That is the cleanest way to do things, but oftentimes they move forward without that. So it's a little bit different in each and every case. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email, questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. Today on May 6th, we've got Our Lady of Grace from Plove di Sacco in Italy in the year 1631. And the story goes that during the four centuries of Venetian rule, the greatest problem for the people of Plove di Sacco was the plague, which in several occurrences over many years brought much misery. The plague of 1576 was long remembered as for its many victims of Padova. Far more serious was the plague of 1631, in which in Padova alone, 18,000 people lost their lives. The death register recorded 362 deaths in 3 years. On April 26, 1631, the town council decided to ask the help of the Virgin. And on May 6, there was a plague-ending procession to the Church of the Madonna della Grazie, Our Lady of the Graces, that is still remembered annually with a procession on that day. And that is May 6th, Our Lady of Grace from Plove di Sacco in Italy in the year 1631. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, or you can download the app, or you can join the Facebook page and be one of over 10,000 followers who get a daily title of Mary. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. This connects with my television show on EWTN, They Might Be Saints, which airs on Fridays at 4 p.m. Central Time. We're filming a new episode this weekend about Mary Therese Dudzik from Chicago, a Franciscan. So that'll be a new episode that comes out shortly on They Might Be Saints. But we also like to keep people updated on sainthood news, people who are coming down the pipeline, you might say, future saints, servants of God, venerables, blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are announced as saints. And so for today, we've got Teresa Enriquez de Alvarado, who lived from 1456 to 1529. At the end of last month, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, received in audience His Eminence, Cardinal Marcelo Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized this Dicastery to promulgate the decree concerning the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Teresa Enriquez de Alvarado, a lay faithful and mother of a family born around 1456 in Valladolid in Spain and died on March 4, 1529 in Torrijos in Spain. And according to the website for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, Teresa Enriquez de Alvarado was a lay faithful and mother of a family. She distinguished herself for her heroic faith and love for Jesus in the Eucharist, which led her to detach herself from the splendor of the Spanish court to devote herself to prayer and charitable activities. And that, again, is the sainthood news. Teresa Enriquez de Alvarado, with one miracle, she will be declared blessed. With a second miracle, she will be named a saint. Let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We do this every week, where we talk about the Servant of God, Venerable or Blessed, whose feast day or death anniversary is on the day's date. May 6th is today, and we've got Blessed Maria Catalina Troiani. And she lived in Rome and in Cairo. She was born in 1813 and lived till 1887. And she was born on January 19th in Giuliano di Roma in Italy. And she was the third of four children born to Tommaso Troiani and Teresa Panici. And her mother died when Maria was six. She was a Franciscan tertiary, and she dedicated herself to the teachings of St. Francis and to the care and education of girls. She was a Franciscan nun, taking the habit on December 8th, 1829, and took the name Sister Maria Teresa of St. Rose in honor of St. Rose of Viterbo. And she's a missionary to North Africa. And she was requested that she start a school for poor girls to be established in Cairo. And Maria and four sisters met with Pope Pius IX in September of 1859 to offer their service. And he gave them his blessing. And the sisters and Father Giuseppe Modin arrived in Cairo in 1859 to begin their work. And in 1868, the group received approval as a formal congregation under the name Third Order Franciscan Sisters of Cairo. They were later renamed the Franciscan Missionary Sisters of Egypt, and in 1950 were renamed the Franciscan Missionaries of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And from the day of their founding until the day of her death, Sister Maria served as Mother Superior to this group, and Pope Leo XIII always held her in high regard. She died in 1887 on May 6th in Cairo of natural causes, and she's buried there in Cairo as well. She was declared venerable in 1982 by John Paul II and beatified by the same Pope, John Paul II, on April 14th, 1985. That is the Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Maria Catalina Troiani, from Rome and Cairo. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Adam Bly about the world of Marian apparitions. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I've written about this in the past, and it's pretty interesting because I have quite a library full of books. Every book, maybe every modern book ever written about the Virgin Mary and her apparitions. And there was a book that came out last year that really caught my attention from Sophia Institute Press, and it's called The World of Marian Apparitions from Vicente Lazuski. And this, in my opinion, is perhaps the greatest book, at least visual compilation, of modern Marian apparitions that I've ever come across. I can't recommend this book anymore. It's absolutely amazing. And one of the aspects of the book is so interesting is that it provides a great overview of Marian apparitions that have happened throughout modern history, perhaps starting as early as Fatima and beyond. And most books only cover those things that relate to the very highly approved and investigated Marian apparitions. And this book covers them all, the full gamut of approved and condemned and others, apparitions that have a chance of being authentic. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by Adam Bly, who wrote the introduction to this book, and he's the Paratus of Religious Demonology for the Diocese of Pittsburgh, and he's the author of a great book in his own right, and that's The Catholic Guide to Miracles. We welcome back to the program today, Adam Bly.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It's good to be here.
It's great to chat with you again, and this book that you wrote the introduction for is an absolute beauty. It comes to us from an author from Poland, Wycenty Lazuski, and the book is an amazing compilation because it uses maps and graphics and photography from all these little-known Marian apparition sites all around the world. What was your reaction when you first got wind of this project and was invited to write the introduction for it, when you saw the vastness of apparitions that are enclosed in this book?
Yeah, it's the vastness, I think, that's important. So we all hear about the very, you know, popular and oft-talked about things, and then the rabbit holes of the conspiracy theories connected with them, and kind of can get distracted and drawn into them. But I think what's fascinating when we can step back and see the broader pattern of Marian apparitions and the things that are said and the way Mary interacts with people, I think that becomes like a fabric or a tapestry that can give us a broader kind of picture and understanding of what's going on, instead of drilling down into somebody's personal reactions and thoughts on a specific apparition and, you know, what they think or don't think. Here we're looking at what is the church study thoroughly, what's still under review, and then what's the overall tapestry or pattern. And I think that's a great contribution here.
Absolutely. And I think what's so interesting is that it does include some of these very famous examples of Marian apparitions that apparition experts and people who love Mary and miracle-minded Catholics are very well familiar with. But then there's a whole array of apparitions that are kind of on the lesser-known end. Perhaps they're still under investigation. And it really opens our eyes up to seeing the you know, how Mary has interacted with our world in both approved and maybe future to be approved Marian apparitions. And there's a great map at the very beginning of the book that lays out all the Marian apparitions throughout modern times. And it's an impressive array. And so when you consider this book, what were some of the things that you learned, new apparitions perhaps, or different things historically related to the visions of Mary? What did you learn that was kind of surprising to you?
The thing that impressed me and that I really got out of this was actually learning the history of the people that Mary appeared to, the impact of the apparition on their lives, and then what happened to them later. And that, in a sense, gave me another side of it that I had never considered in hearing about Marian apparitions. Like, you might hear about Lucia and did she go on and she became a nun. And but this gives you this broader sense of how does this impact a person's life? You know, I think we would all imagine, when we consider a Marian apparition, what if that happened to me? What would I have done? Mm-hmm. How would that impact my life? You know, and wondered about that. And that was the biggest thing that impressed me here. You know, the general message is consistent, and that is turn back to my son. But also the impact on humanity is a personal one in addition to a broad one.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Adam Bly, author of the book, The Catholic Guide to Miracles, and contributor with an introduction to the world of Marian apparitions, which is perhaps the greatest book ever written on Marian apparitions, at least from a visual point of view. And one of the things that's very interesting about this book is that it shows the whole gamut or breadth of Marian apparitions. And we're talking about from Fatima to today, as the subtitle of the book might say. But we're dealing with these very highly approved apparitions like Fatima. And then we're dealing with some that are in process. And there are even some that have been condemned by the church, like the 1948 apparitions in Lipa in the Philippines, a site that I've been to myself. And so
In your opinion, why is it important to show this whole gamut of in the approval process of both approved, condemned, and ongoing in the same book?
Well, I think it's really valuable for the reader to see that whole process and also to see that there are a number that are condemned and found, you know, found to be in error and to be false in some way. You know, the church is cautious in approving Marian apparitions and cautious in terms of endorsing them for the faithful to maybe benefit from. Of course, we know these are all private revelations. The church never says you must believe what's said or happens at these, but the church is also very protective of endorsing any of them. And that caution, that prudence, is really valuable for people to understand and to appreciate that the church isn't just casually saying, oh, great, that sounds good, and let's approve it. And also just the fact that it's the local bishop that actually approves them. It's not the Pope or the Holy See, though they may endorse them indirectly later. You know, there's details in this process that most people aren't aware of.
That's right. I often like to joke that the church's approval process is clear as mud. It harkens back to a 1978 document, The Norms of the Congregation for Proceeding and Judging Alleged Private Revelations, and that's what the church still uses even today. That document has not been updated, but that's what the local bishop will use when assessing a Marian apparition as potentially being authentic. And when we have the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima coming right up around the corner, and when we look at this book, there's a heavy emphasis on Fatima. The book spans the time of Fatima to the modern day. But there are also many references to Fatima, whether it's the life of Sister Lucia or her subsequent visions after those initial visions in 1917. Talk a little bit about the way that the author weaves Fatima throughout this book.
Well, the Fatima message, you know, included instructions, and it included kind of a why in the road for humanity. And a lot of Marian apparitions, as you know, Michael, they come at critical decision points in human history, and it can be heaven's way of kind of guiding us or prompting us to really wake up and look carefully and make a good choice. And Fatima was one of those times. You know, it was a critical moment, you know, towards the end of World War One, and talking about World War Two, which was kind of inconceivable that this would happen again, and yet it did, and the exact sign in the sky that the sky would turn blood red on the eve of it, and that's exactly what happened in Europe. But the ongoing thing is Fatima not only pointed to World War II, but it pointed, you know, to the general kind of critical decision for humanity to turn to her son in obedience or not, and whether the father would eventually bring judgment, and it wouldn't be the endless mercy. And so that caution gets echoed in other Marian apparitions in subsequent decades. So there's basically a continuous tapestry of ongoing input from heaven, whether we've successfully responded to the previous and what is going to be the future impact of our response or lack of response. And so there's a pattern of kind of prophetic or consoling or encouraging messages from Mary. It's not just isolated incidents.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Adam Bly, the author of The Catholic Guide to Miracles and the writer of the introduction for the book World of Marian Apparitions by Polish author Vincente Lazuski. And when we look at this book, every single person I show this book to absolutely falls in love with it. Like I say, it is the ultimate in a visual compilation of Marian apparitions, at least modern ones, especially considering those across the whole gamut of approved and condemned and in process. When we consider those apparitions in process being judged by the church, do you foresee more apparitions to be approved in the future, or are they kind of stuck in this middle ground that are never going to be approved?
Well, I think, as you said, the document that's used to guide the bishop's decision hasn't changed. So I think others will be approved depending on what heaven does. I think humanity's response hopefully will be consistent with the church's document. but we have to wait and see what heaven chooses to do. You know, the kind of very famous ongoing question about Medjugorje, mm-hmm. And kind of a passive approval of visiting, but not a statement saying that this is definitely valid. You know, it's been kind of a controversial situation. Different bishops there having, in some cases, different views on it. Mm-hmm. So that one's a big one, whether that will finally be approved. And by the way, of course, the church waits until something is completely run its course and finished so that it can be judged in totality. Mm-hmm. The church doesn't want to make a judgment on an ongoing situation, because if the church makes a judgment now and then it spins out of control, it can be seen as an endorsement of something that's heretical or in error.
That's right.
So you know, that's part of it. But basically, we have to wait on heaven. You know, it's up to, I think, the church to judge properly and well, but it's up to heaven to decide whether we'll be given more real apparitions.
Very well put. We've been talking today with Adam Bly, the author of The Catholic Guide to Miracles and the writer of the introduction to the book, The World of Marian Apparitions, from Sophia Institute Press. I encourage everyone to pick this one up. This is the ultimate in books on or visual compilations related to Marian apparitions. And as we wrap up the interview today, Adam, what is your hope? You wrote a beautiful introduction to this book, and as I say, everybody who picks up this book has a very positive reaction when they're holding this beautiful hardcover, coffee table-like book in their hands. What is your hope for people who pick up this book and learn about it?
Well, my hope is conversion, that they go deeper into the times heaven speaks to us through Marian apparitions, but that, more importantly, that leads to conversion. That the overall message that Mary brings of turning to her son will really resonate for the person when they see that full tapestry across time, across many apparitions. And also, as you say, through the beauty of the book itself, just as a church is beautiful and inspires a response, I think this book will add that layer of beauty that will hopefully speak to their hearts.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, we're so grateful to you, Adam Bly, the Paratus of Religious Demonology in the Diocese of Pittsburgh and author of The Catholic Guide to Miracles, for talking to us today about this beautiful book from Sophie Institute Press, The World of Marian Apparitions. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Michael. God bless you.
God bless. That was Adam Bly. Check out this book, The World of Marian Apparitions. It's a beauty. Anyone who picks this one up is going to absolutely fall in love with Mary all over again. It's such a beautiful visual compilation. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho, the Vice Postulator for Jacinta and Francisco, talking to us about the future of Sister Lucia's canonization cause, and Adam Bly, always fascinating, talking to us about the world of Marian apparitions. Check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter tonight, Saturday, May 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, to tune in as I take a trip to the famed ruins of Pompeii, where I'll be exploring the life's work of Blessed Bartolo Longo, known as the Apostle of the Rosary. He lived an incredible life. Check out my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural, out from Tan Books and available at EWTNRC.com. I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.